And they go off together with their drum sets off. That's Mark and Joan Lipman telling you all about Asbury Radio.
Whole history combined right there.
Yeah, isn't it great?
Yeah.
And we want to give a shout out to Florida, to the two of them, Mark and Joan Lipman. What a pair. This is Maureen Nevin for Asbury Radio, your host, and I'm sitting opposite the beautiful, luscious Maura Martello.
Speaking for Asbury Free Radio.
That's it. What do we always say?
We speak up. Why?
Because it's
America.
All right, we have a great show for you tonight. We have the people from the Monmouth County Human Relations Commission who are going to be talking about the rights and responsibilities of foreign-born workers. So stay tuned for that in our second hour. And we have with us Henry Vaccaro is going to be talking to us, and Dan Chalameo will be calling in. Both want to talk about the coming down of this C8 building, the skeletal, condo building. The skeletal building that was a symbol of the failed redevelopment. Not that Henry is, of course. Henry's still a towering person.
Figure.
Sorry, I get blamed.
A towering figure. That's right. Yeah, and he gets blamed for everything. And we have to have, somebody has to, you know, we have to have somebody to beat up.
So somebody gets beat up more than you, Maureen?
Impossible.
Well, it used to be him. It used to be Henry, and now it's me. I know Larry thinks it's him. What else we'll be talking about? We'll be talking about what this means, of course, to Metro Homes losing several floors. They had 16, and it's probably going to come down to about 12 stories there on block 176. So we're going to be talking about that. I think Warner's going to be calling in to comment and weigh in with his opinion as well. He kind of corrected us about, I guess we should get this. Well, no, let Warner correct us on that. It's actually corrected on the website already, because Warner drew my attention to it.
And corrected you.
Yes, he did, as he would want to do occasionally. But our star
even
tonight,
when you're right, he corrects you.
You know, he's got that way. But our star tonight, we're also going to talk about the mayor's ball, too. But our star tonight is Tom Boyd.
Yeah.
He wants to grease your bearings.
Yeah.
What was it, the pulleys? Adjust your pulleys way too tight?
You got them way too tight. glad to be here. Thank you for inviting me. I guess they figured they had to get the person in here responsible for that tune. And front
5 years they've been listening to it.
And you know, you people are towers of patience and fortitude out there. I'm very grateful.
Mr. Fix It.
Happy to be here.
And to the lady in the Asbury Tower who said, is this Restore Radio? You didn't play that song.
Well, I've been thrown out of other places before, so it's okay.
You put us on the map here, Tom. And
You've raised the subject, I'll get this out of the way, although it's not to be dismissed. You have been a stalwart friend of my family in that CD campaign. And we appreciate it a lot. It's
Henry
a lot
bought
for us.
Several.
Oh well.
Several copies.
Many thanks to you, and it mattered. It counted. And we appreciate it. Thank you.
I think I hear it in the background. Franz is doing his thing over here.
Oh dear. Oh dear.
The old fuse box.
It's my greatest hit.
I don't know how many dirty jokes we made about fuse boxes.
Yeah.
I've only heard one or two. So.
You know, we're missing those double entendres now with the rumbo.
I'll go to work on some other tunes and try to see what I can do.
All right.
Do.
Yeah.
It's a pleasure to be down here. I'm a shore boy. I went to Monmouth College and lived in up and down the shore, and it's great to be back.
And you live in Manhattan. You summer in Vancouver.
I like the way you put that. I summer in Vancouver. Yeah, we flee the city when it's hot and sticky. And we do. We spend time on the West Coast and in Canada and California, where we have lots of friends, where I lived for a while. But I, you know, you are always a product of where you've been.
Yes.
I spent an awful lot of years here in Monmouth County, and I'm glad I did. And it's good to be back here.
Yeah, and we're going to be talking later on about, pardon moi, about some of your your observations that you shared with us over dinner tonight.
Maureen made dinner
through together.
She made this delicious. For those of you out there clamoring for vacation, for an invitation to Maureen's home, she prepared a deluxe meal for us all tonight. It's fabulous.
I just threw it all in the oven. That's the way it usually comes out best, you know, if you fuss over it and worry over it, doesn't
the things people can do with spam are just, you know, they are dazzling. I'm amazed.
Learned it all in kindergarten. Well, we're going to be spending a lot of time with Tom tonight, and it's our pleasure, of course. We want to thank the people, though, that make this show possible. Bring all this madness to the air, the friends of Asbury Radio. And some of them are relatives of people in the studio tonight. The hardware store, of course.
My favorite brother.
That's your favorite brother. Sebastian. That's a great name, Sebastian. The Caro. And, of course, there are other people. Tom O'Leary, the Irish Prince of Asbury Park. Jerry Scarano, the Italian Prince of Asbury Park. And Pete Zito. The again, another Italian prince, but he's of Philadelphia. And also Dr. Richard Fernicola, who specializes in acute musculoskeletal pain management joint injections. You have to get somebody who's just a country doctor, you know? Can we just do that? Dr. Richard Fernicola. Okay, well, we got it out.
Old Dr. Fernicola.
Poor Francis, there's a little feedback in here. I don't know if you can hear it, but I know what's going on here. Hold on. Was that it? Did we take care of that? All right. Because we don't need the sound to record.
No, it's way too high tech for me. I'm sorry.
I should have done that. Because remember, Jules finally said, you can leave those speakers home. You don't need to take those.
You get past tin cans and strings, I'm lost.
That's, that's it. It's been a while since you were in the old studio. But
it's been a while.
We're going to be talking about Tom's old radio days. That's fine. Dr. Richard Fernicola, if you want to call him and tell him that he shouldn't be supporting the show, or you want to thank him for supporting the show, 732-774-0601 is the number, 774-0601. And you can go right to his office at 2002 Sunset Avenue in Ocean Township. And Upstage Magazine, the theater reviews, the latest in fine arts, the fine arts scene, books, poetry, comedy, dance. It's all there, and it's distributed free from New Brunswick, Princeton, Trenton, Asbury Park, Long Branch, Red Bank, all those fine places. That's Gary Ween, our buddy there, 732-774-8877. To talk to Gary, 774-8877, or go to upstagemagazine.com, where you can advertise, put in your ad, or read the magazine, or do both. The Rag is your monthly entertainment source serving the Jersey Shore with 12,000 readers. The Rag can be found in Seabright as well as Point Pleasant, with all points in between. Each week, The Rag covers local theater, restaurants, local bartenders. And he said he will spotlight me. I don't know how long I can keep up the gig, but both I keep doing this, you know, I might get spotlighted. Did you know that, Henry? I'm over at the Adriatic on Fridays. You want to come over? Yeah. All right, you come over and have the light beer. Of course, I can't push this on the air. It's not allowed. But anyway, I'll tell you about that later. Have I cut in on Trish's tips? No. She comes in at the end of the shift. Yeah. No. Anyway, can't mess around with that, you know. DeSanto & Coons, LLP, 605 Madison Avenue in Asbury Park. DeSanto & Coons. Oh, we have someone downstairs. All right. Okay. Offers counseling and personal injury and workers' compensation claims. They handle real estate closings and civil court matters, including DUI cases and divorce and visitation issues. That's Tommy DeSanto. Initial consultation is always free. Night and weekend appointments are possible. Call Tommy DeSanto, 869-1500. 869-1500 is the number to call for Tommy. And Dr. Gina Bruno, is our chiropractor of choice here. Her practice is called To Health and Back Chiropractic Natural Wellness Center, and she's located centrally at 710 Cookman Avenue, right here in beautiful Asbury Park. She's above the Moxie store, which you have to check out too. Call Dr. Gina and make an appointment with her right away, 732-604-4852. That's 604-4852. Very talented person, performer, and also a very good physician. Listen to this show tonight, live over the web, and in a few hours in recorded form on the web. And that web streaming of Asbury Radio is brought to you by AsburyPark.net, your source for Asbury Park news and information 24 hours a day. That's Pete Walton. Are we up there, Maestro? Folks, do you see us up there on the internet? Yep, Nancy's nodding in the affirmative. And you can also reach AsburyPark.net from AsburyRadio.com. Just type that in there, and you'll see there's a little link there. Just go to AsburyPark.net. In the hardware store, as we were saying, it's Sebastian Picaro and the family, Olivia. Who else? Who were we talking to this week? I told everybody how Steve was so great with the air conditioner. Olivia had this air conditioner and it didn't work out. She used it for like a week. She put it up for sale. I'm looking all over for an air conditioner. I bought it. Olivia, it's working great, man. It's really fantastic. But the best part is Steve. What's Steve's last name? Do you know?
Don't know.
Everybody knows who he is, but nobody knows who he is. Anyway, he actually delivered it. He got in his car, drove it over to my house.
Did he put it in?
He put it in, and then he said, you really need a couple of boards to kind of set...
Let what out?
He's in there with the saw. He's buzzing the wood. Put it... You can't go wrong at the hardware store. This is the moral of that story.
So you don't get that kind of service if you go out to Home Depot.
No, Home Chico, never. No, they're not going to do that for you. So check out the hardware store and all those characters at 428 Main Street in Asbury Park. It's right near the post office. If you're looking at orange awning, do you still have the orange awning?
No.
Anyway, you can't miss it. It's on the corner. And the firm of Bowen Fernicola LLC in the Galleria in Red Bank, call Bowen Fernicola at 732-345-0600. They're specialists in condemnation, eminent domain, and redevelopment law. We can leave that door open when the AC's not on so we don't all die in here. Paul Fernicola is your expert on eminent domain redevelopment law. Call him at 732-345-0600. Jersey Urban Renewal is still trying to save the Jersey at 212 2nd Avenue in Asbury Park. Beautiful Spanish Mission style architecture. And now they're actually doing some things up in Paterson, Passaic County. It's beautiful stuff up there. Restoration work, really good. And if I could remember the name of it, maybe Rich will call in and tell us. They have a little website. You can go look at that and see the wonderful historic job. Did you go up there, Henry? You went up there.
No, I talked to Richard, and I think it's Cross Something Condos on Market Street.
Wait, isn't
Market Street.
Cross Fall or Fall Cross?
I don't know.
I know cells are dead.
19 Market Street.
That's right. He knows the address. Okay, so Rich, if you could call in with the website address, you know, the cyber address, that'd help. Without the support of these underwriters, we'd probably be home doing something actually productive right now. No. Did I say that? We wouldn't be able to bring you shows like this one tonight, which is important.
Funny how your subconscious sometimes
just
surface.
I have no control. Not only do I lose control over the show, but my mouth as well. It's frightening. Absolutely frightening.
It's like working with Linda Blair. And you never know what personality.
Does her head go all the way around?
Pretty scary stuff.
It does go all the way around.
I don't know what I've gotten into here.
On the way up. Okay, well, I think we should go directly to Henry Picaro now without any further delay. We're going to talk about Metro Homes says it must... This is your intro, Henry. Metro Homes says it must demolish the 16-story skeletal building on the block bordered by Kingsley Street and Ocean Avenue. This just came out recently, and because I knew it last week, but forgot to break the story. Now, there you are.
You're doing it now.
Old, well, old age is so...
Breaking.
No, Nancy Shields broke the story.
Before you.
Okay. I'm
hang your head in shame, girl.
I'm throwing in the towel. That's it.
What now?
My favorite person.
I am? No, Nancy Shields.
No way.
Nancy Shields.
Pretty soon Dan Jacobson is going to be upstaging you if you don't watch it.
He'll be breaking news.
Yeah.
Scary stuff.
I was going to say something rude.
It's time to throw it in. Anyway, by reusing the existing skeleton, Metro Homes had been entitled to 12 more stories than Block 176 is designated for under the plan. Well, actually, that's not quite true, because Werner corrected us and said it would be 8 stories. So it, actually, they were entitled to 8 more stories than under the plan. Plus a bonus of 64 more units. Tearing it down means Metro Homes will be limited to the 8 stories versus their 16. Now, how does that impact Metro's profit forecast and its deal with Asbury Partners, which sold him the block, and sold them the block? We've invited, by the way, Metro's Paul Freed to call in. I left a message. I also realized when I was leaving that message that I had left him a message on September 13th, which I guess was when I was going to break this story. And he never called back. So I was being like a good little girl, not...
You were holding it.
Wait, I was holding it. I was sitting on it, you know, because...
You were sitting on it.
You sat on it too long.
I sat on it too long.
She hatched it.
So he didn't call back either.
Oh, there you go.
I think, you know, this is... There's a lesson here, but I won't go into it now. We all know what it is. Okay.
Yeah, you
don't call back, you know. Okay. Now, how should the questions might be answered tonight? How should the city proceed? What does this do to the profits and all that? But we want to go now to Henry Vaccaro, whose family goes way back in Asbury Park, and Henry was rather involved in the last redevelopment here. He knows a thing or two about redevelopment and building costs and what happens when you lose 8 floors, 8 stories.
Well, I really can't comment on that because nobody here is privy to the contract that Metro Homes has with
Asbury
Partners. I can comment on the structure because my firm did the foundation work on that structure.
Which is kind of sad, right?
Well,
but
what you have to understand is, you know, and it's not a run-of-the-mill foundation. There's piling called pressure-injected footings. It's not your standard piling. Piling is usually a wood piling, a steel piling, steel casing, or a precast concrete.
We should explain the reason we're starting with the foundation is because this was given as the reason why they decided they were going to have to tear it down.
That's from what I read in the paper.
Which is what, Maureen, that the foundation was not up to standard?
No, it's a real long story because I have talked to Paul Freed and I tried to assist him.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem goes back in 1989,
Bradley
way back then. When a foundation was installed, there was a company called Frankie Foundations, which had a patent on, it's called a PIF, pressure injected footing, and it's used in areas of sandy soil. And what it is it's a unique system where they take a steel caisson, probably 12 inches in diameter, hollow, drive it into the ground, and then they put what's called zero slump concrete, which is concrete that's just mixed with just enough water to bind it. So you have the aggregate of the, you have sand, gravel, cement, and just enough water to bind it, goes into this casing.
Mm-hmm.
It is then pounded into the ground, like a pile driver, but it's pounded through the casing, and at the bottom, it mushrooms out.
Okay.
So it creates more of a point bearing.
Kind of a foot down there.
Yeah, correct, like an elephant's foot.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Now, there's concrete, and what's the other... What is the material made of that actually comes down? And
it's sand, cement, gravel, and then it's pounded into the ground and it mushrooms out and it expands as it gets into the ground. And the more you pound it, depending on the density of the sand, the more it spreads out. Now, after that was installed, then they had to do a test on it,
mm-hmm.
and the test had to determine the adequacy of that foundation and if it was the right foundation system for that project. A test was done, and I believe they got 50-ton capacity on the one pile, and I was interested, and I witnessed it. And to do the test, they basically built a false work out of a steel bed.
False work.
In other words, it means it comes down later. It's a frame. They built a frame out of steel, sides out of wood like a big box, and filled it full of sand. They filled it full of 50 tons of sand. And then underneath that, they put a hydraulic jack off the top of this one pressure-injected footing. And a man stayed there, I believe, for 3 or 4 days straight, calibrating. He had a transit, and he had some type of calibration machine to measure the deflection. And then after 4 days, when they took the sand out, then they measured it again to see if it came up. So it passed the test. To hold
so 50 it measured whether or not that foundation, that footing actually came
was adequate. It measured the adequacy of the pressure injected footing. And after that, they then proceeded to drive the rest of them.
Uh-huh.
On top of those pressure injected footings, or as traditionally they're called piling, there were pile caps. You have a cluster of maybe 3 or 4 of these footings, maybe 16, 18 inches apart. On top of that, you would build a form and pour a pile cap, which would be probably 4 feet in depth by maybe 6 feet in square. And on top of that, there would be anchor bolts, and the steel would then sit on top of the pile caps. And my company had the contract to install the pile caps and the grade beams on top of the pressure-injected footings installed by Frankie Foundation. There's $1.5 million in the ground that nobody sees. The pile, the pressure-injected footings were close to $1 million, and back then in '89, my contract was $560,000 or $580,000 just for the concrete that went on top of the pressure-injected footings. I was contacted by Mr. Freed maybe, I don't know, about 6 or 7 months ago when they first got involved, and they were in a due diligence stage, and he asked me if I could give him some help. They had no test results or no test reports on the foundations. And their lender required that before they would fund the project. I went through my files. I had nothing. I traced back the Frankie Foundation Company is no longer in business.
Mm-hmm.
The consulting engineer who performed the test is no longer around. And I even called up Joe Carabella.
Mm-hmm.
Bit my tongue and called up old Joe. And he was helpful.
And of course, that was your partner.
That was my partner.
In the redevelopment. And it was... Carabetta's, did you both own that building at the time? That it
yes,
was
it was a partnership called Carabetta Vaccaro Developers.
Mm-hmm.
And I called him up. He actually had his girl, Mary, search 3 or 4 days through the files, and they could find nothing.
On the
test reports of the piling. Now, okay. That was needed in order to appease the lender who had hired a professional engineer to check the adequacy of the building that they were going to loan money on.
Mm-hmm.
So since that wasn't found, it kind of put a damper on things. So they had a couple alternative sources. One is to put load tests on the building, but the problem you had there is at this point in time, some of the steel is rusting. So, you know, and that was my last contact with Paul Freed.
The steel, of course, is still standing, 16
correct.
Floors of the steel, so how can you test the bottom footings? I mean, if it was only the foundation, you could load test it, right?
Yeah, but look, you can load test anything, but at what cost?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's probably my last conversation regarding the structure with Paul Freed. But I do know it was their intention to proceed with the building, with the structure, and in fact, they altered their drawings to altered their design to work with the steel framework that was in place.
Because it was my understanding that they had announced that their engineers had signed off on it.
Their engineers might have signed off on, but maybe the bank's engineers or the lenders. I mean, we don't know this, and this is only speculation, and maybe I shouldn't even be discussing
Colin Paul.
But that's what happens. I mean, you have a lender. And before they loan money on a structure that's been sitting there for 15 years, they want to know the adequacy of everything. And you could visibly see the steel, but what you couldn't see was what was under it. And again, the piling in '89, maybe they don't meet the standards of today's new designs. I don't know.
But we're an awfully far way down the road here, aren't we? I mean, how long ago did we have the groundbreaking? Wasn't it a year ago, October? Was it more than a year ago, October?
When
Metro Health made the...
I guess it would be a year ago, or is it, are we going back 2 years?
Yeah, but don't forget this. After the groundbreaking, the next thing that happened is the design was rejected, if you recall.
Right, but the design...
Okay,
I mean, you would think that you'd come up with a design after you decided whether you're going to buy the property or not, right? And you had funding in place, then you'd worry about the design, right?
You would think so, but all we know is that there was a due diligence period that Metro Homes had to decide if they're going to accept the structure based on representations made by a third party. Now, I don't know the extent of the due diligence period or if it's expired or what has happened, but I do know they changed their design, and they still tried to use what was there. And evidently, at this point in time, somebody decided that, hey, what's there is maybe not adequate, or maybe it would give a black eye to a person that was a potential buyer when they see a building sat for 15 years. I mean, it's, who knows?
So it's because I thought they were in the pre-construction sales phase, you know.
I can't answer that question.
The two other fast-track developers, they're the third one.
Yeah, but the difference is the other two fast-track developers are in the ground. They have their model apartments in place, right? They have their design done and they're building.
Who has a model apartment in place?
Paramount Homes. And
where's his model? Where's the model?
On the site. Haven't you been down there?
What do you mean in the trailer? You mean like a little model? Oh, okay. I thought you meant like full-scale model.
A sales model.
Okay. No, actually, I haven't been in the trailer. They haven't invited me. It's odd, isn't it? But, no, the person who's authorized to speak to the media, who I finally, you know, it took many weeks, but I finally found out who it is, she's invited me to meet with her sometime in October. So we do have a date.
You made a point that I would react to only as an outsider now, not living here anymore. But if I were to come into Asbury seeing all the condominium development going on, a great big thing down at the end where there used to be a merry-go-round. I don't know what the name of that place is, but it's huge. And I had as a comparable, something I could consider, or a place that had been standing there in the rain, rusting, for 15 years.
Psychologically, it
wouldn't
play on your mind.
I wouldn't touch it. So. Unless somebody could persuade me that it had been all, you know, retrofitted and cleaned up and fixed, or torn down, started over.
Well, it would have to be retrofitted and cleaned in order to pass today's test. It would have to be sandblasted, and in fact, this is crazy. Before Metro Homes got involved, I looked at the building because I heard that Hovnanian was buying that site at that point in time, and they were going to demolish the building. And I actually wanted to take, but this is going back 2 years, I wanted to take the building down piece by piece and reconstruct part of it as a parking structure and then the framework as a new structure at another location.
Right.
Oh, I see. You were going to take it apart and, you know, recycle.
But the problem was,
okay,
every joint was welded. Okay. Besides being bolted, it was welded. So by the time you cut the weld, you destroyed the steel.
Oh, I see.
So now it only basically has scrap value.
Well, one of the people who has been predicting that this would be the case, that they would be announcing that they were going to have to tear down the skeleton, is Dan Shanameo, who is an Asbury Park homeowner and also an appraiser in New York. And he's calling in, I think, from New York right now. Dan, are you on the line?
Yes, I am.
Hey, are you calling it from New York or are you here in Asbury?
Yeah, I'm in New York. I have to work for a living.
Yes, some of us, some of them. Well, we're here in the studio with Henry Vaccaro and Tom Boyd.
Hi, Dan.
Hey, Tom. I still think they're using that piling system. You know, I mean, I've just seen that used when they rebuilt the Staten Island ferry terminals on both the Staten Island side and the Manhattan side.
Oh, it's a great system. I just don't know if Frankie is still around.
Yeah, but I've seen them use that exact system with the metal encased pilings and putting the cement mixture down there, pounding them in. Maureen, you know,
yeah.
I know you say, like, and Warner said it to me, about that it's not the 2 and 4 stories, that it's the 8 stories if they take down the structure. I still don't, the only place I see that in the plan is at the end of the plan when they compare the 1990 plan to the 2002 plan, and it sort of contradicts, which I think is a more controlling section of the plan, which talks about land use, which I gave to you and you put up on your site.
Right.
And, I mean, there it clearly says that if you take the structure down, the CH structure down on block 176, then it is subject to the same height and density as, I think, block 161, which is almost the exact size, same plot size. And there it says 2 and 4 stories and about 89 units. And, you know, working with those numbers, I did some calculations on the way home to the ferry, because I know that if you're stuck with building a 2 and 4 story building there and 89 units, as compared to a 10 and 16 story building with 224 units, number one, the land is less valuable, which means Asbury Partners loses some money, and the project is less valuable to Metro. And I did some rough calculations, and I think I'm in the ballpark. But when I put them both together,
isn't Werner correct that it's actually 8 stories? It's not the 4.
I don't see where he's getting that from. I mean, he clearly says in the plan.
He takes that from 75 and 76, pages 75 and 76, where it's
that
little circle.
What is that, Maureen, you're looking at?
This is the waterfront redevelopment plan, and actually I've got the March 15th version, but there's a June 5 version as well, of 2002. And it's got these circles with numbers in them, and those circles are actually the maximum building heights that are allowable.
I know, the document, which I think is it's an earlier page, I think it might be page 73, that I gave you, that I highlighted, and it was up on.
No, that was 77. That's
77, which is under the land use section. I mean, and it clearly has text that goes with it and says that, you know, would be, you know, unless the plan is contradicting itself, which is not impossible considering this thing.
Well, Werner's, and I'm sorry that I'm eating up Werner's time, but he did say that it's in the language here above. He says, this chart and the illustrative plan show how units might be distributed over the prime renewal area in a general manner. So his reading is that this is the way it might be. It doesn't necessarily have to be.
No,
so
okay, but then again, another part of the plan says, if you take the structure down, Block 176 is limited to 2 and 4 stories. So who's ever wrong and right, but, you know, I'm going to work on the basis that it's 2 and 4 stories and 89 units. Now, by reusing the CH structure, they get a bonus, I think, of 64 units.
Right.
And the difference between 89 units if that you take the structure down and 224 is 135 units.
Yeah.
64 units is included in that 135 as a bonus. Now, if you don't reuse the structure, you don't get the bonus, and you can't build that many units, except the difference between the 64 and the 135 is 71 units. Fishman, or the waterfront redevelopment area, he can redistribute them somewhere else, but he loses the bonus, and he can't put them there. But I've done some calculations, and knowing what they're looking for and seeing some preliminary pro forma construction budgets for the Esperanza, you know, working with average square foot and figuring that they're looking to make $100 per square foot profit, I come up with like a total loss from Asbury Partners and Metro, if they can't build that, of like about $30 million. And
really?
The loss is from a couple of reasons. You got to understand, number one, you're losing so many units, certainly 135 units right there, but you're losing 64 units as a bonus right there, right away. Then you could make more profit because even though it will cost you somewhat more, but you could sell for an even higher increment units that are higher located. So generally you're going to make more profit, not just in aggregate, but even on a per unit basis, in a 10 and 16 story building than you are in a 2 and a 4 story building. So Metro is going to lose two different ways. It's going to lose some units outright, and mm-hmm. it's going to make less profit even on the remaining units because they're in lower buildings.
And this is whether it's 4 or 8, they're still going to lose those units, is your point?
Yeah, and I mean, I'm using ballpark figures, but I figure their loss to Metro is about $21.5 million.
Wow.
Now, the loss to Asbury Partners, because number one, Metro or someone else is not going to pay them as much money for the land because they're losing so many units, their loss is about close to $9 million. And you got to remember, Asbury Partners is doing these deals on the basis of you pay me so much per unit up front. Mm-hmm. And for C8, they were paying like about $77,000 per unit up front, plus about exactly 7% of the projected sales of the condos, which, you know, ran to about another $50,000. So they were getting like about $123,000, I think, all in, which was not even including the infrastructure.
Per unit.
Mm-hmm. And so Asbury Partners, number one, would lose the money on the units that it lost. Their 7% would be on a lower basis because building in a 2 and a 4 or even an 8-story building would have less profit, less aggregate sales prices. They would lose that way. Of course, they get to redistribute those other 71 units that they can't build there somewhere else, but they're probably not going to be on the waterfront. And who knows even if they could build them somewhere else. And they're still not going to be able to sell as much as they would in a 16-story building on the waterfront. So, you know, there's a lot of money at play here, like $30 million. And, you know, I'm just in the ballpark. I'm using estimates. But I guarantee I'm not, like, more than 25% off. And I may be too low because even on a building, you know, like Henry knows, Asbury Partners is getting in and out. But it's the builder who takes the risk. You know, he makes, there's additional profit in this. It's not just the profit of selling the land. It's the profit of selling the units that you're looking to make on your costs. Mm. So I suspect that they're going, Asbury Partners and Metro is going to ask for an amendment to the plan.
That's the way I say it.
Uh-huh.
And they're going to go in on a hardship, that it was their intention to develop the building and leave the steel up, but because of circumstances beyond their control, they couldn't do that, and I think it's going to be granted.
Well, you know, it probably will, but there's no way that it really should be granted unless we get something in return. And I'm not saying to take, you know, if it's the $30 million, you don't take the whole $30 million. I mean, get it from both parties.
Right.
Because there's no incentive for them to give you everything because they're back at this selling base.
Yeah, but now, Dan, at the same time, Metro Homes has added cost because they had planned on using the steel, which had a value, and now it's got to come down. You got to pay to demolish it, and you got to buy new steel. And the loss of time.
They can recycle the steel.
It goes to the junk man. Recycle it.
Yeah, and I saw in the budget they had $18 million to steal in this project. And, you know, using, again, an average square foot unit size of 1,200 square feet.
We weren't getting the benefit of any of that, were we?
I don't think so. I mean, there is money in that ground, and certainly, and I was wondering about that, you know, what value was put towards the structure of the foundation. But $18 million to sale on, like, a 300,000 square foot building is still, like, about, you know, $60 a square foot overall. That, you know, that sounds like new steel to me for an entire building.
So they were. You figured they were paying $60 a square foot versus the $100 a square foot you would expect them to pay? Is that what you're saying?
No, what I'm saying is in their construction budget, they had $18 million for steel, which comes down to a cost of $60 per buildable square foot, assuming 300,000 square feet. To me, that number sounds like the cost for a completely new steel structure in a building.
But here's the problem. I mean, you now have to demolish the building, you're going to rip out the foundations, and you're going to put a new piling system in. I'm sure they didn't have that in the budget. And really, really, we're picking on Metro Homes when they don't deserve to be picked on.
Well,
In all honesty, they came into town with good intentions. They've bent over backwards, everything the city wanted. They changed the design. They did everything. And now they're faced with a dilemma because they bought a pig in a poke and
Well, wait a minute. Nobody said that the property was not sold to them with a guarantee that that foundation or any contingency that everything was based on them being able to use the steel. They knew it was a risk when they took it.
But all I'm saying is now, if the steel comes down, the foundations come out.
Which they knew was a possibility.
Well, I'm sure that's not in the budget that Dan talks about.
No, but, you know, then don't do the deal.
Well, do you want to chase them?
Huh?
Well, yeah.
Or do you want to have Nanny? Let's face it, do you want the shit that Havnani was going to build there?
Radio.
No.
Okay.
Seriously, we've got to watch our language.
I'm sorry.
So what? Is the city pushed against the wall then?
No, I'm not saying the city's pushed against the wall, but personally, I'd rather have a high rise, which belongs there, as opposed to four stories of townhomes, which are stick built like Tamar slums that are being built in Long Branch.
Yeah, but why is it an either or proposition? I mean, there are a lot of legitimate builders. I mean, this whole attitude about the waterfront has always been that this is the last chance. You know, I mean.
All I'm saying is Metro Homes did everything that the city asked.
Right, and they knew that this was a possibility. I mean, if they didn't figure this in as a risk factor, then they weren't doing good due diligence.
Well, then they shouldn't pay $29 million for the land if they can't build that much. And Asbury Partners stands to lose money as well. The thing is, why should we put money in everybody's pocket and get nothing in return? I'm not saying we don't give the amendment, but what I'm saying is you're making people whole and making profit for them by doing that amendment, and the city ought to see something out of that. And if it's $30 million... You know, it's $20 million. I mean, we should get something that could really help this city.
I agree.
I mean, if it was $30 million and they both kicked in and we got 15, I mean, we wouldn't have to refinance the sewer debt.
Well, I agree with that. But at the same time, if it's going to cost the developer additional money, he doesn't see the $30 million profit.
Well, I would then like to see how much you made, and that's we'd have to, you know, you have to do a real analysis of how much extra it is going to cost, and maybe you amend it in another way that, you know, gives them incentive. You know, I don't think a lot of people are against even allowing density in certain areas in return for something else. The problem with this city, this council, is
there's
always zero. We never get anything for the amendments. I mean, you're a developer, Henry. You know, a developer asks for something. I mean, it's basically a money game, whether it's that he can build higher to make more profit or he can do this to cut his costs. It's a money game. You know, when they gave the last amendment for the definition of what a story is, they could put a mezzanine in there. I mean, they put money in somebody's pocket, but not ours. And we got nothing in return. I mean, it's just every stroke of the game from the triangle.
And it's not that the council wasn't aware of the possibility of doing that, because we raised it during the meeting before they voted on it. And they still said, oh, well, we'll get something back later on something else, some other thing that they're going to want in the future.
Oh, yeah, they think they're going to get it back on the streets surrounding the triangle, but that'll be a surprise for them.
The streets are already sold on the triangle.
It's a political question, I suspect, but are there developers lined up knocking on the door to develop the site? Or are you down to a couple you got to choose between?
Here's the thing. As I was saying earlier, the developers do not go before us. The developers go before Asbury Partners. So it essentially cut off our line of communication to know whether or not there are developers coming to us. Now, I've spoken to Don Samet recently, who said that there have been hotel owners who have come forth, people who are representing chains, hotel chains, expressing an interest in that palace property, the former palace property. But, you know, that's the problem. They go to, who has the redevelopment rights? Not us.
Mm-hmm.
They go to Asbury Partners.
Okay. Let me just say one thing, though. I agree with what you're saying. but also on behalf of the city, they have a proven oversight here that has not taken place in Long Branch. Just look at the quality of what is being built.
I agree with you.
Okay?
I agree with you.
And even the CH site, it was a beautiful structure. First-class design, whether it gets built or not, I can't comment on it.
You mean the design for this to replace the CH?
Yes, and everything is being built. I mean, mm-hmm. it's quality. And I mean, I've been in construction a long time, and when you see, you know, names like Tishman, I mean, they're not the greatest in the world, but they bring credibility to the project.
Mm-hmm. And that's what we want. But then
when you see reinforced concrete buildings, not stick-built.
Right, but these are the standards that we should be following.
Absolutely, and I'm saying that the city has imposed those standards with their review boards and everything, so I'm very pleased with that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think no one could complain about the review, except probably Tommy DeSanto thinks there's too much review.
Well, sometimes there is, but, you know, but the end product, you know, let's face it, they even stopped Paramount Homes because they changed something from the initial review, and they made them go back to what was approved. I mean, that's right.
I've got absolutely no problem with that, the strict standards and the good aesthetics that we're looking for,
yeah,
and the quality, but it's just that when it comes time to do something that increases the profit of somebody else,
mm-hmm,
we don't get anything. Now, you know, if you build better, you know, good developers will build quality because they know, first of all, it's their reputation,
right,
and two, they'll get more money for it.
And there's no comeback afterwards for corrections.
Exactly.
I'm
not even sure that should be part of this criteria. I mean, basically, we have a plan, and the plan said if the former Ocean Mile structure on block 176 is demolished, the height limits for the new structures on this block shall match those for block 161. And block 161 is 2 and 4 stories and 89 units.
And
it's so
about the same plot size as CA.
It's about the same. The lot is 76,511 for 161, and it's 76,684 for 176 for the CA. So
if it's the same size and the same height limits, it would yield about the same amount of units, which is shown 89 for 161.
Right. I mean,
somewhere I recall that if CA came down, it mm-hmm. was that they could build 12 stories. Now, where I saw that, and I recall, I think it was in the original MOU that was signed.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, everything supersedes now, right?
Well, I don't know.
But, you know, we're constantly told. Hello?
Hey, it's Warner.
Hi, Warner. You're weighing in on this issue?
No? Well, you know, you keep referring to the wrong data in your discussion here, unfortunately.
Okay, Warner, correct us.
The reference you're making to block 161 is referring to the design, control, bulk, and height standards.
Right. Are you going to go back? Have you been listening to the show from the start?
It's not referring to the little table that is simply an example of what could potentially be built. You have to get that table out of your mind and out of your discussion. The design, bulk, and height standard map is what is the governing document. So along Kingsley Street, the limit is 8 floors. At mid-block between Ocean and Kingsley, it's 4 floors, and along Ocean, it's 3 floors, just like all of the other blocks in the oceanfront.
And we did discuss this.
Okay, great. So you keep referring back to this limit of number of units.
Because the language, we wanted to read the language that's on that.
Well, you're doing only a piecemeal reading of the language. You need to take the entire paragraph in context.
We did read the earlier part of the paragraph.
Okay. Well, you keep repeating.
Put the table in there if it means something.
It does mean something. It's an example of how the unit distribution might be built out. There are no specific number controls in our development plan. There is simply a total number of units permitted, and nowhere in the plan does it say each development site is limited to a specific number. It was the heights that were intended to physically limit the number of units you could build.
Right. Well, that's why I said.
Well, it's 3, 4, and 8 progressing from the beach westward.
this is why Werner, earlier, after we got past that part that you're discussing now, that's why we said either it doesn't matter whether it's 4 or 8, what we're talking about is the number of units that they're going to lose.
Well, that's all well and good, but you keep referring to the same error in your discussions.
But we've pretty much explained to people that there is this difference.
Werner?
Yes, sir.
It's Emmer. Just a question. Don't you recall the MOU allowing 12 stories?
The MOU was contingent upon the building being used and the frame being used as originally envisioned with a 10-story tower and a 16-story tower. Now, what they've done with the MOU is that they've claimed that the MOU was superseded by the amendment to the plan, which is true at this point. So the MOU was a guideline for negotiation, and then the plan was amended in a different fashion that the MOU said.
Okay.
which is what I just said.
Are you on the planning board? No, I'm not on the planning board, but I attended every planning board meeting as an official city historian.
So, in exile. But the approvals that were given for this, are they specific that it's assuming reuse of the CH structure?
Yes. What my understanding is that prior to purchasing the site, the applicant, Metro Homes, approached the TRC and the planning board to go through their process prior to them actually having confirmation as being the sub-developer. So they took the risk, and that was mentioned at the meeting specifically, that they were taking the risk themselves to go through the pre-approval process, the planning phases, and the design review without having been
designated as a developer.
As a developer, right, without having been vetted and made a designated sub-developer. So they took the risk along those lines. And the representation by their engineers was that they had studied the building and it was about 80% salvageable. So it's kind of a surprise now that this is coming to revelation that the building has to come down.
Yeah, but Werner, I think it's the lender that is the one that is not accepting the foundation and the structure.
That may very well be, yeah. But they made representations that they had studied the issue, and the planning board took that as their testimony. So as far as it stands now, they have the approval to do this Esperanza project, and no one anticipated that the entire building would need to be raised. So that raises an entire issue of the intent of the plan and that specific clause.
Werner, does that change the plans that they presented, the designs at all?
Oh, absolutely, sure. Because it's a different context completely. It's 3 stories followed by 4 followed by 8 in the standard pattern that the plan is geared to.
And let me ask you, Werner, can approvals by the planning board contradict or violate the plan? To be legal, does the plan have to be amended then?
Well, this is a whole problem within the city, in general, is the plan is the governing document. And a lot of people seem to feel that the contract is, which has no basis in law. The contract and the approvals must follow the adopted plan. If not, the plan needs to be amended before those approvals are given.
And so to deviate from it, you must amend the plan.
Absolutely, sure. Otherwise, you're violating your own land use zoning. Essentially, the plan, the redevelopment plan, regardless of the contract, is the land use in place. It's as if you owning a piece of property here and wanting to put a bar in a residential area. You can't enter into a contract to do that with somebody and then do it if the zoning doesn't say you can. So our waterfront redevelopment plan is, in fact, the zoning and the law. As far as land use goes.
Well, I'm going to free up the line. I guess this is our council's chance to shut us critics up.
I really agree with all of you that are saying that there should be some quid pro quo, in terms of the amendments or consideration. The city to this point has gotten very little. We're higher in debt, our taxes are going up, the beachfront looks like a shambles still 4 years later. And it's about time that somebody, buckle down here. All right.
So what would you want the city, Werner and Dan, I'd like to ask both of you, if you could just do it in 1 minute each.
Yeah, ma'am.
What would you expect the city to ask in return if they were to, I guess the solution is to allow them to build to the same height?
In reference to building to the same height, the same envelope, I would say that a major rezoning would be the most appropriate request. To take everything from the C8 south to the Empress and rezone that to be entertainment, commercial, and retail. In order to restore the heritage and the cultural aspects of Asbury Park.
And that wouldn't cost them anything, would it?
That would not cost them anything. They would just have to redistribute the number of units to other areas. And I've always proposed redistributing the density to the northern end of the project and freeing up the core, you know, circuit that everybody knows and loves for restoring somewhat more of a traditional Asbury Park beachfront along with condo development.
Well, if you restore the circuit, that would mess up their North End Triangle project.
No, I think you're taking my comment literally as far as the circuit. You know, I'm talking about from C8 down to the Empress, you know, the core of the beachfront area between those sites, essentially. Could be a very nice entertainment transitional commercial area.
I'm an old-time guy here. This is Tom. Would you just save Madame Marie's, please? You know,
absolutely.
You guys,
as long as they paint it back to the way it was.
Do what you can to save Madame Marie's, and I'll sign off on this plan.
All right.
Okay,
right.
Dan.
Okay, take care.
Dan, what's your weigh in on that?
Well, number one, I'd like to see a real professional analysis of what it's worth to everybody, to me, to Asbury Partners and Metro. And then I would want 50% of that. And because I don't trust, I hear what Warren is saying, and he may be more, have the longer view than I do, but I don't trust that very part, so I'd rather take the money.
Right.
And I take the check.
Take the check.
Or, you know, if I wanted to do something else with it, they can put it in the fund or, you know, twist his arm to have a completely funded restoration plan for the casino backed by performance bonds and letters of credit.
Okay.
That's what I'd want.
All right.
Okay.
Dan, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Very enlightening. Appreciate it. Night. And thank you to Werner out there who hung up already. We're coming up on 9 o'clock, and we're going to be thanking our underwriters. Henry, do you want to weigh in with your conclusions on that before
well,
we go to the underwriters?
Yeah, my conclusion is I think the city should consider a waiver or an amendment to allow the planned building to be built. And, yes, they should get something in return for it.
You're not going to go out on a limb and say what?
No, it's not my purview. I don't sit on a council. I'm just a broken-down old contract.
All right. And get something for it. All right. Okay. I thank you very much, Henry Vaccaro. You can hang out with us if you want, but I don't know if broken old contractors want to hang out here with us broken old radio types. Go ahead.
The station you are listening to is WYGG in your Pimpin' FM as Asbury Park.
Yes, you definitely. All right, we want to thank our underwriters. If we could get a little Mark and Joan Lippman going here in the background. Yeah, there it is. Yeah. Radio voice of Asbury Park here. We want to thank Addison's, looking to remodel your kitchen or bath with exclusive high-end custom cabinetry. Then visit Addison's, a 54-year-old family business at 52 Main Avenue in Ocean Grove. Or call Addison's at 732-776-6927. That's Addison's, WANENSEN. Jersey Urban Renewal wants you to see its plans for the Jersey Court. Jersey Urban wants the Jersey to be the second redevelopment project in Asbury Park under the new redevelopment plan. The owners of the Jersey are struggling to save this historic building from demolition. So go on jerseycondominiums.com, see what their plans are, and call Rich DiPietro and see what he has in mind, 732-223-6706. Call the city and tell them to save that building. 732-223-6706. Got any ideas about that, Henry? Jersey Apartments?
I think it should be saved.
Should be saved.
Absolutely.
All right.
Even though I'm in a demolition business, it should be saved.
we should have said this at the top of the show, too. There's a possibility that you might be doing business for Metro Homes, right?
I don't know. I'm giving them a bid like everybody else.
Okay. All right. You just get that out there for the sake of disclosure, as they say. And Asbury Radio welcomes Dr. Gina Bono to Helping Back, a chiropractor who has made amazing changes in my life. Dr. Gina, It's in the heart of Asbury Park, 710 Kirkland Avenue. And she actually does this sort of thing for Broadway performers, the cast of Chicago. She's treated, as well as many other famous actors and musicians, and actually Connie DiPietro as well, that famous actress. And she's got many testimonials that we can fill in for you. Dr. Gina can be reached at 732-604-4852. That's 604-4852 in the hardware store. Sheetrock, lumber, plywood, you know, tools, electric tools that you can rent, and U-Hauls to bring them up to the house in that you can rent. AP Hardware Store at yahoo.com to send them an email. Call the hardware store at 732-988-3339. That's 988-3339. And the firm of Bowen Fornicola LLC in Red Bank, specialist in condemnation, eminent domain, and redevelopment law. Call Bowen Fornicola at 732-345-0600. That's 345-0600. And I want to tell everyone, please go to my website. Please go to asburyradio.com. And take a look. There's a link there. It says eminent domain. It's right under the subject for tonight. You'll see Bill Giordano wrote a very impassioned letter to the politicians, really raising some cane with them, telling them that they are not they're not doing what they promised him they would do just a few short weeks ago about keeping him from losing his home in Long Branch to waterfront redevelopment.
Yeah, I have it right here. It's in the Asbury Park Press today.
That's the one to Pelea and...
Well, this is, it's an editorial, I would assume. It's called Topic of the Day, Eminent Domain. It looks like an editorial, but in fact, it's a letter to the editor that he wrote. It's probably essentially the same thing.
Yeah, well, this letter to Pelea, really, if you want to go online, just check it out. Because it really says, you know, Joe Pelea said this to me just a month or two ago, and now you're sitting on your hands, you're not doing anything to save my home. He's got three children, he doesn't want a condominium, you know. How are you going to let the kids out to play on the balcony, you know? It doesn't work for him. And these are not blighted properties, it's not right. So go on there, please check that out. Can we play a little music now, Tom? Did you bring some music for us? Could we go to that now?
Sure, we can.
Break, turn the air conditioner on?
We certainly can. I was delighted to be invited to bring down some stuff. Music is the way I was introduced to your show.
That's
and
right.
All of y'all got to hear me over and over week after week. I think that what I'd like to play is a cut by a guy named David Rovix. It's apropos our conversation, and I think it's a big picture question about what happens to cities and towns. The first cut on the CD, Franz, this is David Rovix. Used to be a city in this town.
I was young one. Long time ago, things were different than I thought they should. This old building was a factory. We made steps, Grandpa and me. It wasn't easy, but life was going down. There used to be a city in this town. Rustin Rail Yard had a hotel and a couple of stores. We had good times here between the wars. Wasn't paradise, but there was music in the street. Right there's where your grandparents had a chance to meet. They got married in that church. I can still see her wedding gown. Used to be a city in the town. When the change came, it started one by one.
First the layoff, then the factory lockdown. Then came the highway, suburbs and Walmart. That was the final blow that tore the place apart. But it seems like just last year, when there were people all around. Used to be a city in this town. Census says there's people here, but I think someone's confused. Just look out on these sidewalks, they're not seeing you. No, when a city dies, it doesn't die with green. It just becomes a ruin, shouting this once to please. I get the signs of me, but I don't know where I'd be bound. There used to be a city in this town. There used to be a city in this town. There used to be a city in this town. There used to be a city in this town.
Well, that about sums it up.
We're having a little feedback.
Things were feeding back. That's the guy's name is David Rovics, R-O-V-I-C-S. He's a New York native. He lived all over the West Coast. He learned his politics, his activism, and a lot of his music from Phil Oakes.
Oh yeah,
and,
sounded
you
a little
Phil
like
and
him.
People like that. And he works very hard to use music as a way to express political and social issues that are important. I'm glad I could bring him to you.
Yeah, thank you. I really appreciate it. Of course, you're tuned to Asbury Radio, the radio voice of Asbury Park. This is your host, Maureen Nevin. And we've got Maura Martello in residence tonight, which is a great thrill here.
And a rarity.
A rarity. and we're going to be going to our guests from the Monmouth County Human Relations Commission in a minute. I want to tell people that tonight is also Garage Restaurant and Cafe Night, 7th Avenue South. Our friend Yardina with Zona Tropical is playing tonight there. And we have a caller on the line. Good evening. Welcome to Asbury Radio.
Hi, Asbury Radio. This is Miss Kiss.
Hey, the Kiss. The Kiss and Tell Report.
I have to tell you, this song that you just played now, I was back in 1941 walking to the city of Asbury Park, and it was blossoming. That's a lovely, lovely memory.
Yeah, that's courtesy of Tom Boyd brought that to you.
Oh, is he the one that oiled my things?
He greased your belly.
I'm glad you remember it. Glad you liked it.
Oh, I loved it, Tom. Thank you so much. I really don't have much to report except that we are excited about the C8 building. We feel sadly that someone's going to take a beating on this, but we're glad to see it go.
The skeleton, right?
Yeah.
Well, let's hope they when they put the new skeleton up, they don't stop there.
No, because we know that is the most important thing as far as the seniors here. They constantly say, "When is that thing going to be torn down?" We had heard that they weren't going to tear it down, that they were going to add to it, and we all said, "Boy, we wouldn't want our grandkids living there."
It's so true.
We may be gray, but we're not dumb.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, Maureen, Rita Moreno is quoted on the front page of the Coaster.
It's not right. It's not right.
She beat me to it.
Okay, sweetie, have a nice. And again, Tom, thank you so much. It's a wonderful song.
You're very welcome.
Is that your whole report?
That's all you got, kid.
That's it, huh? All right.
I love you.
All right, next week, we want a full report.
Well, we're already advertising for Rosie the Riveter.
Oh, you are?
Yeah, we're pushing for that. We've got topics. We've got that. And Sean King's going to come to us on Veterans Day and dedicate a flag to us that flew over the Capitol. And we're going to have a big reception there, so I'm going to be cluing you guys in about that.
All right, good. And we should tell people, if you were involved as a Rosie, which means that you kept the home fires burning back during World War II, we definitely want to hear from you.
Yes, and it's going to be a big thing on the patio. All will be welcome, and I know it's going to be a Kodak moment.
And, of course, the show. Don't forget the show. The show.
And we have already accepted invitations for our holiday show. We've got a fantastic chorus this year, and I'm going to find out when you can book us.
All right. Very good. Very good. Get in touch. Stay in touch.
I will. Take care now.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
All right. Thanks very much, kids. Mary Ann Kislowski. I'm trying to get a candid shot here, but you keep coming up as Hemingway, you know, and I know that I'm trying to get a silly shot.
He met an unfortunate end.
Yes, well, you're never going to do that,
no,
Tom.
No.
But I'm just trying to get kind of,
pictures on the radio reminds me of having like a roller skating act on the radio.
We've had that, Tom.
You've had roller skating?
And we've done that too, yes. We've had tap dance. I've had tap dancers in the studio.
Have you really?
Yes. Yes, wow. And he brought along his own little dance floor so that people would be able to hear it.
It's an audio experience. Thing. Yeah, good tap, anyway.
We've had mime.
Mime on the radio.
I'm not going to remember what his name
is. It opens up whole new career vistas, doesn't it?
Yeah. It certainly does. And speaking of career vistas, we have two women with us tonight who are... Are you both volunteers on the commission, are you not?
Yes, we are.
Right. We have Yesenia
mm-hmm.
Piker, you've held the position of Bilingual Field Representative Community Liaison for the Monmouth County Office on Aging for more than 2 years. I once did a survey for that agency. On the elder abuse.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting, as well. I was at Rutgers. Very good organization. She specializes in community outreach to the rapidly growing Hispanic population within the county. She has a bachelor's degree in political science and a master's degree in corporate communications and public relations, and she's also a member of the Monmouth County Latino Chamber of Commerce, which I've made contact with. The League of United Latin Active Citizens, the New Jersey State Leadership Alliance, Monmouth County Human Relations Commission, which, of course, we had Larry Trout on from that organization to talk about basically what they were doing in terms of abuse to try and cut down minority abuse, kind of picking people out in the crowd, knowing that they probably don't have a bank account and probably going to get hit over the head, kind of things, and telling them what their rights were. We had Detective D'Amico on at the same time from the county prosecutor's office to talk about what's being done to help the foreign-born people kind of defend themselves against that kind of abuse. So Linda Zaccaro, who actually used to be Larry Trout, she used to be the president. Is it the president or executive director?
The chairperson.
Chairperson,
mm-hmm.
Right. She was going to be with us, but we decided to go with you two. And we'll save Linda for another time. Your first advocate and American Heart Association task force member. Prior to coming to the Monmouth County Office on Aging, Yesenia worked for the New Jersey State Senate as a political communications director. Aha! Aha! We'll have to tap her brain on that. And we also welcome to the show. We also have with us Fatima. Potente.
Yes.
Yeah? And you're Executive Director of Hispanic Affairs and Resource in the Resource Center of Monmouth County. And of course, many times, we've reached out to Fatima. And you were born in the province of Sanchez, Dominican Republic.
Yes.
If there's anyone out there from Dominican Republic, you might want to listen closely here, one of your countrymen. In 1965, you migrated to the States with your parents and two brothers, and you lived in New York most of your adult life and attended Kingsborough Community College and the American Institute of Banking.
That goes way back, right?
Where you studied business management. I think we used to get those people every summer at Rutgers. Didn't you have, like, a program at Rutgers University in New Brunswick?
I don't remember back that far.
Yeah, but that was 20 years ago.
We're dating ourselves.
Was it Kathleen Shimeda said, say it was a little while ago. Say 20 years. You can't say that.
Our ages have been printed in the paper.
Yes.
Still living that down.
Yeah, well, that's
Water Under the Bridge?
Thank God it was in the weekly, not the...
Although, God.
It stays around the whole week.
What a shock.
You know, the daily would have been a better bet there. But, now you're... Tell me what you do for the Latin community in your day job, and then we'll talk about the commission.
Right. Well, Hispanic Affairs and Resource Center, just to give you a little bit of history, was founded in 1976. So we're going into our 30th anniversary, which is a big milestone for us. Basically, we provide multi-services and we advocate for the Latino community in Monmouth County. We provide multi-services, protective services, educational, career counseling, domestic violence advocacy. We work very closely with DICES. Mm-hmm. We have a very comprehensive educational program for women. We have ESL, you know, English as a second language, and computer classes. So we're pretty involved with a lot of different things. We have offices in Asbury Park. That's our main office, and we're proud to be here. Mm-hmm. In Freehold and Red Bank. Mm-hmm. So we're all over the county.
And of course, you're going to have a workshop coming up. And the reason that you're here tonight, mm-hmm. You and Yesenia.
You said it right.
Did I say it right?
Mm-hmm.
Yesenia. It's because of the workshop for the commission that is going to be coming up. Now, there was one today, right? There was one today?
No, that
8 to 12 affirmative action offices.
That
right?
was at Monmouth County, and that was actually for, it's not the same, it's not within the same core group is what we have. That was for... that was for AO officers, affirmative action officers in the schools, and it was the impact that foreign immigrants have in the school system.
Oh,
that's what the workshop was on today.
Now, the one that you're going to be talking about tonight is the one that's coming up in October, right?
Yes.
And this is for foreign-born workers?
The date on that one is October the 9th. Mm-hmm. It's at Jesus Lord Church in Keyport. And the title is Rights and Responsibilities for Immigrant Workers, Undocumented Workers primarily. And it pretty much discusses what the rights are of the undocumented as well as what the responsibilities are of the undocumented workers.
All right. You know, it's interesting because I've had a Mexican-born worker painting my house for several days now, and he's an independent contractor, of course. And I was trying to tell him, you know, reasons why he should probably go to this and attend this. So what should I have been telling him? You know, why should he be interested in doing this?
Well, he's an independent contractor, so he is. I'm not sure if he's undocumented or not, but a lot
of course you don't ask. You
we
know,
don't ask.
Painting your house,
yes.
you don't ask.
But an undocumented worker should know what their rights are as far as back wage issues, because that's a big problem.
If you're working for someone else.
Yes. You know, a lot of employers are under the impression that because these people are undocumented, that they cannot claim their back wages.
Oh.
And with the Department of Labor, they do have their rights to collect back wages. And they have an excellent department in the Department of Labor to handle those issues. We have several other issues that they're going to handle. Discrimination and abuse in the workplace. What happens when you get hurt at work. And undocumented workers do have the right to get a workman's comp as well. They'll explain all that to them at the workshop or at the conference. And also we'll be helping people to figure out how to file their tax returns. Mm-hmm. Because one of the things that we emphasize for undocumented workers is that it's important for them to have a record of their income tax returns. So when there comes a time where they can file for their
Social Security
or they are documented,
mm-hmm.
And they get naturalized. That's one of the things that's taken into consideration, that you have to have at least 5 years of tax returns.
Now, to me, that seems kind of contradictory, mm-hmm. and I'm sure this is probably, you know, the average person would ask the same thing. How can you file taxes if you don't have a Social Security number, and mm-hmm. wouldn't that make you documented by the very fact that you have the Social Security number?
Yeah, it's a little complicated, but it's fascinating to me because there's a mechanism in place where the IRS will issue a migrant, quote-unquote migrant worker, a tax ID number. It's called the W-7 number. That has to be done exclusively through the IRS. And this number basically is used to file tax returns. It cannot be used as ID, to the best of my knowledge. It can only be used to file your tax returns. And then the...
And so then they would take some money out for Social Security and set
yes.
aside.
So, you know, this is a good tool for the undocumented worker because a lot of folks out there say that people are here not paying their taxes, and a lot of them are paying their taxes. But if they're not, you know, we urge our clients or the undocumented workers to get their W-7 number and file the tax returns, because it will validate them as more yeah. like the citizens.
Yeah, because they're becoming documented.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And eventually, you know, these tax returns can be used to hopefully become documented.
So in other words, if you do want to become either documented or a citizen,
mm-hmm.
right, it's not the same thing, right? You can
yes,
become documented without,
first, yes.
without becoming a citizen.
Right, yes, yes.
But it will help your case.
Yes, it will.
That's a very important aspect of the responsibility component of this seminar, because what we want is to, it's twofold. We want to let undocumented immigrants know that although they're undocumented, they have rights. They if they work, they have the right to get paid. If their children go to school in the country, in the state, in the community, they have a right to be active in the process. However, if they want to be a part of the community, they have responsibilities as well. Taxation is the number one. They do pay taxes through sales tax. They pay taxes if they rent. They pay taxes through renting and then paying by that would be the property taxes. But if they want to become and create a dossier to stay here and to be a citizen, paying taxes by filing with a TIN number and by filing the W-7 is a way that they can do that. And this workshop allows them to not only understand their rights, but to also understand equally their responsibilities.
And how they would go about, like this independent painter,
mm-hmm.
go about keeping a record of the wages and making their quarterly payments,
right.
Estimated payments. It seems like a hard sell, though. I mean, just be devil's advocate
mm-hmm.
for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, here you have somebody who's kind of under the radar, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And they're making their money in cash, and of course, you know, if you make, let's say, $100 a day, and you're not paying tax, it's probably about $100 worth about what, $150
mm-hmm.
maybe a day.
Right.
Isn't that a hard sell that you have to try and convince these people to take, you know, that $50 and set it aside for Uncle Sam?
Mm-hmm. I think you're right in a way, but, you know, with the law of averages, I would say that if we send a message out to, let's say, 10 people, a couple of them would definitely realize how important it is. And also I think that people out here with their families
mm-hmm.
must realize how important it is for them to do this, because it will just validate, you know, their citizenship here.
It's also important to identify that there are all undocumented workers that are here. There are a few different types. And what I mean, I'm not even talking about their ethnicities, the countries of origin. I'm talking about the fact that there are those that come here. They come here to make money and go into return. And those are the ones that it would be a hard sell to.
Mm-hmm.
But the ones that are here that really want to make a life here, they want to build a foundation here and eventually bring their families here, they're the ones. And the majority that I've worked with are the ones that are willing to create a dossier to fill out the TIN numbers, to get a TIN number, fill out the W-7s, because they want to become legal citizens.
Mm-hmm. Now, if they're working, say, off the books
mm-hmm.
for an employer, it's probably a good thing for them to start, you know, saying, look, I want to be on the books, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that they can get benefits, health benefits, I would think. I mean, it how does that usually work out? If they're off the books, they're probably not getting any protection, correct?
The community that I work with, I mean, I work, my day job is working with the Office on Aging, and I deal with a lot of, obviously, seniors 60 and over. And a lot of them do not, they've been here for many years, have not been documented, and they don't have health coverage, so they go to the free clinic, or they apply for charity care, which, you know, it's an option, but it shouldn't be the only option.
It's getting not as good as it used to be.
Exactly.
They're having to turn people away now.
Yes. And furthermore, these people that have been here, the seniors especially that I work with that are undocumented, they've been here for many years. They've worked for many years. And they don't get the benefits of Medicare, Medicaid. They don't get any of those benefits simply because they're not here legally.
And what about the homestead rebate that the renters usually get, right? If it's a rental property and you're renting, you usually get a piece of that, right?
Mm-hmm.
You get your homestead rebate.
Right.
I imagine, I wonder how many of them actually get that.
I don't think so many of them get that.
Very few.
Are you going to cover that in the workshop?
Actually, that's a good question. We'll try to cover that at the workshop.
Yeah.
We'll mention it to the
department. These are old things that, you know, are on that side of the scale.
Mm-hmm.
It says, you know, it's better to be legit and on the up and up.
Absolutely,
right?
Absolutely, yeah.
There are rewards for it, right?
Yeah, yes, unfortunately about the health insurance, a lot of people are working off the books, and they get hurt. And sometimes they are the main breadwinners of their family here and back home. And then it's a very unfortunate situation because they don't know what to do here. They don't want to go back home and be a burden. So it's very sad. There are a lot of bad
things. Yeah, and there are a lot of injuries on the job.
A lot.
I mean, you know, they're going to give that, you know, the foreign guy, we'll give it to him to do,
mm-hmm.
you know, that little risky thing, and they
mm-hmm.
might not buy the harness that they should be
mm-hmm. right, exactly.
you know, supplying to the guy because
mm-hmm.
of that, you know. And of course, too, there is that backlash. People say, well, they're taking the jobs and they don't pay taxes.
Right.
Right. So there is that negative image that
that's
you want.
Right. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
And people don't realize, the general public, only because we need to be educated on how much these foreign workers do pay taxes. Like Jasenia was saying, local taxes, you know, the purchasing power creates tax revenue.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a big misconception about undocumented immigrants not paying taxes.
Right, right.
So I think
they,
that, you know,
they need everything, so they're buying, they're
right.
setting up their homes.
This is definitely a conference where we're inviting both the undocumented immigrants and the employers.
Ah, okay.
We would love everybody to be there. We'll do the conference bilingual.
Mm-hmm.
It will be in Spanish and English.
Now, what's the incentive for the employers to come?
Well, some employers might feel a little intimidated, but I think the open-minded employer might learn about the law and how it protects their employees and what the responsibilities of the employees are.
Yeah, before they get a visit.
Yes, or a call.
Yeah,
yes.
From the immigration
right.
people, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Or the IRS.
IRS most likely, yeah.
Yeah.
I've had some experience working on some outreach campaigns to encourage people to take advantage of systems of all kinds.
Mm-hmm.
The systems were so ill-prepared to respond
mm-hmm.
that most of the materials weren't even published in Spanish. How are we doing here in Monmouth County with that?
Mm-hmm.
How are we doing here in New Jersey with that?
Good question, Tom. Well, the influx since the 1990 census to the 2000 census, the Hispanic population in Monmouth County has increased 18%. At the Office on Aging in particular, most of our information is in Spanish. At this conference that we're hosting and all the conferences that we've hosted thus far, the information is in Spanish. The Division of Civil Rights will be there. They bring all their information in Spanish. The Department of Labor brings their information in
mm-hmm.
Spanish. We're prepared to handle the people that are coming in, and that's the, I don't want to say the trend, but it is the trend that is throughout the state is offering the information in Spanish and being prepared to deal with that, that group.
And also, I'm sorry, the facilitators are, I would say, 90% Spanish, Spanish-speaking.
Mm-hmm. Great, great. Now, what about driver's licenses? I mean, I'm kind of confused about that. There was this whole thing that came up during the last election, presidential election, right? What was that debate? They wanted to...
I think also it was in the California Senate
race,
right? Governor's race, wasn't it?
Yeah,
Schwarzenegger versus...
What was it? He wanted them to be able to use their driver's license?
Could they mm-hmm. could they be issued driver's license at all? Wasn't that it?
Right, and you wanted them to so that they could vote or something. If they had a driver's license, they could vote or something. Mm-hmm. What was that all about?
Well, there's such a thing as, right, you can register to vote at the Motor Vehicles Bureau. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm too foggy on the details about that.
Yeah.
But what about getting a driver's license? Can you be undocumented and get a driver's license?
No. The new 6-point ID system, the driver's license system, you have to present 6 points of identification at the Division of Motors.
It's hard if you're a citizen.
It's very difficult. Exactly. If you're a citizen, it's a difficult task. Being undocumented is virtually impossible.
Don't be married several times and try to get a... Not that I have, but I have family members who...
I have problems with that, but I've gone back to my own name now.
I think that'd be evidence of some unpreparedness to do anything if you're, you know, married several times.
Well,
suggest some instability.
Some character flaw there.
I don't think
double time is okay.
Well, you keep doing it until you get it right, you know.
Well, actually, we're not going to cover the license issue during the conference.
It won't be.
No.
No, it's not on the agenda.
Really, like I said, it's a very delicate issue right now. It's a lot of discussion going on, and we really don't know enough about it.
Is it under review now? It's as far as the federal or state?
Well, as far as the committee's concerned, we haven't discussed that at all.
No, but one thing I do know that is under review is those people that already have licenses in the state, a lot of them are being revoked. A lot of them are being taken away from the immigrant population. However they acquired them, I'm not sure, but I do know I attended the Attorney General Conference for Hispanic Outreach, and that was one of the issues that was brought up, is the fact that the licenses of people that already have licenses that need to renew are being revoked because they can't present the documentation that they need.
And of course, this goes back to the abuse situation too. I'm not saying that it's abusive to do this. I mean, we have to have protection. Terrorism, we have to know who's driving around. But if you have to rely on somebody driving a van, I mean, it's that famous image that everybody has seen is, you know, commuting to work. You see the image with all the foreign-born workers is stuffed into these vans.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that the guy who's driving is getting a good deal, you know, because he's delivering all these guys who have no other choice but to go with him. Maybe if they could drive themselves, they could get that extra, you know, buck an hour or something, you know, but they're kind of a captive audience. They're a captive labor pool, aren't they?
Mm-hmm. Yes, they are. Yes.
So what's being done? What's involved with getting documented? Because that's what it's all about, right?
Yes.
So basically, it's applying for your...
I'm not really an authority on immigration, but it's a little bit complicated right now.
Because when we did the original show with, oh gosh, you probably know his name, I believe he's in Red Bank, the immigration attorney, is it Kretzky? He's a great immigration attorney.
Mm-hmm.
But he was saying that the way that the law was running out, and then 9/11 happened, and they didn't renew the law. They let it lapse. So the people who were here without documentation were kind of caught now, mm-hmm. because there's no way, there's no structure for them to get legal.
Right.
And they can't, you know, all they can do is leave, actually.
well, like you said, stay under the radar, basically,
yeah.
Or leave.
Or fly under, yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. So let's make your job really tough.
Very tough, yeah. You know, Hispanic Affairs serves, I would say, our 90 or 95% of our client base is undocumented. And it makes it very difficult for us to find services for our clients. It's a daily challenge for us.
And it's funny because, I mean, Bush has kind of taken a strange stance on this, too, because, I mean, he's the whole Texas focus, they're right there with the border. He's got foreign-born relatives in his family, and he's pretty much tried to get things approved.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
An amnesty, was he?
Yeah, wasn't he pushing for amnesty?
I've lost interest in what he's pushing for, frankly.
It went by the wayside. It really did. It was really kind of shoveled
us off,
yeah,
that whole effort,
so,
right?
Yeah.
But I mean, it's ridiculous. This problem's not going to go away. I mean, mm-hmm. it's trying to put a legal face on something that mm-hmm. the other part of the country is saying no. You know, it's wrong. It's not going to be right. So what you're doing basically is this W-7, right?
Yes, I think that's the beginning. It's the beginning. You know, get people to do their taxes, and for people to know their rights and their responsibilities. You know, their civil rights and their civic responsibilities.
So they're going to apply for this W-7. Are you going to have paperwork there for them to do this?
Yes, there'll be paperwork there. There'll be people from the Department of Taxation that can help them with that. And one person was going to be helping people as well. But one thing that a lot of people don't realize is, in order to get your TIN number, you have to file your taxes.
Your TIN number?
The W-7 number. It's okay. The same number of digits as your Social Security number, right? In order to obtain that number, you do have to file taxes. That's the only way you can get it.
But it doesn't give you legitimacy?
No, it doesn't.
It just puts you in a track toward legitimacy?
Yes.
Yeah,
it creates
a paper trail.
Right, exactly.
The other, I'm sorry, Maureen. The other question I have, as well as, you know, people perhaps thinking, well, why should I do that if I can put $100 in my
mm-hmm.
pocket? Why should I pay to Uncle Sam? Is there a fear? I would have a fear, I would imagine, if I was an undocumented worker, that by paying taxes, I'm going to have the IRS show up at my,
mm-hmm.
The INS show up at my door.
Right.
Yes, you know, and what is the likelihood of that? Or is that not something that people should be worried about?
Likely won't happen. Yes, that is a big fear.
Yeah.
With most of our community, that if they go public with anything, if they file taxes,
they sign their name to anything,
that they will be reported to the INS. But at this juncture, you know, we always reassure them that it has nothing to do with INS. And if it's done in the right venue,
mm-hmm.
Most people are very comfortable with what we're doing.
That's very interesting. I mean, it really is a way out of being becoming an undocumented worker.
It is slow. It is very slow, yes.
But
yes.
It is a way out.
But it is.
I mean, you're talking about a paper trail.
Mm-hmm.
And we're creating a paper trail. I mean, what's to keep the INS from following the paper trail? I mean,
you were just saying
that. We have a 2-hour show devoted to the Patriot Act
mm-hmm.
and all the things that are allowed under the Patriot Act. There is nothing to prevent any agency of the government from giving up its data to somebody else.
At this point, because of 9/11, the government's focus is not on the undocumented worker. It's more on finding terrorists.
Yeah.
And they really haven't focused on doing, you know, any raids and any.
It would be too overwhelming.
Yes.
Yeah. They're overwhelmed as they are.
Oh, they are.
Checking everybody's airlines.
Shouldn't there be some sort of human relations, and get back to your commission, shouldn't there be some kind of commitment to the human element of this, to say, well, you know, if these people are willing to go for a W-7, then
mm-hmm.
we will give them a pass, or we will, shouldn't they get some sureties here?
Well, Gee, there's a big question there, Maureen. We ought to expect straight shooting and honesty and fair dealing from our elected officials and our public policy process. And often we are let down in those expectations.
Mm-hmm.
For all good reasons, I suspect. There have been all kinds of things done in the name of protecting us from terrorism.
You mean Halliburton?
I mean everything from try to mail a package to Canada, try to get a package from Canada, to much more serious, more rigorous tests.
Mm-hmm.
And I would think, and you know, you raised a good point, that if I were an undocumented alien, this would be a very perilous time.
Well, I don't
want to. So, you know, I think you've got a terrifically difficult job.
But I also don't want to discourage these two ladies on the show tonight. You know, I think they know what they're talking about. And
they're being very honest.
And let's face it, I'm not an expert. You know, Tom.
Nor am I.
So I don't want to discourage if there's anybody out there listening to the show tonight who I don't want to turn them off. You know, I want them to come to this, you know, this, seminar that you're having and mm-hmm. find out more
oh,
from
absolutely.
The expert.
Right, absolutely. Right. Yeah. And ask tough questions, and you will help them get good answers.
Thank you. Well, there are people that live here, like you said, all their life. They go to work, they have children, and they really know how to navigate through the system, you know, and they mm-hmm. have to survive.
Yes.
But there are other people that feel very uncomfortable. They get abused at work. Mm-hmm. They don't get paid.
Yeah.
I mean, people that are owed thousands and thousands of dollars. I don't know how they survive.
Yeah.
And there are unscrupulous employers.
Yeah.
And that's why we're here. You know, I think most people that we're talking to or the audience that we're targeting know that they have to follow the law. We have to let them know what the law is.
Mm-hmm.
But also, most importantly, is the employers need to know that these are human beings, that they have rights.
Mm-hmm.
And
they
Amen.
We have a caller on the line. Maybe they have a question about this. Good evening and welcome to Asbury Radio. You're on the air.
Hello, Maureen. My name is Linda Zuccaro.
Hey there.
We were possibly going to see one another this evening, but I have two wonderful colleagues who are doing the job.
They sure are.
Oh, thank you.
I wanted to make this comment. I've listened all the way through and enjoy your questions particularly because they're very pointed and directly to the issue. But we take the position on the County Human Relations Commission that at the county level, we deal with what we have living here in Monmouth County.
Mm-hmm.
And there are, as Platinum very clearly pointed out, a number of undocumented workers.
Mm-hmm.
We may individually care very much about the immigration issue, mm-hmm. but we acknowledge that it's a federal issue,
mm-hmm.
and it's a decision that awaits federal policy.
I see.
Leadership from the executive and then acts of Congress as appropriate. In the meantime, we're going to do our very best to see to it that all residents of Monmouth County, regardless of their status, are informed of the rights they have as residents in this county and this state,
mm-hmm.
and the responsibilities they have as well. Now, I'm not sure I've added anything to the whole discussion here, but I think that's where we stand on dealing with the question of documentation. A lot of
mm-hmm.
the things, and Fatima and Yesenia have put it very well, that we encourage people to do are part of what we call their civic responsibility. I think Fatima used that term.
Mm-hmm.
And all of us, you know, we know plenty of American citizens who find ways to dodge paying taxes.
That's right.
It's a citizenship issue. It's
fully documented.
It's a civic, residential, being part of a community issue.
Mm-hmm. Right. But just to press the point just a little bit more, what kinds of assurances is the county ready to make as far as if the federal government should say, okay, I want to see your records now?
Well, I don't think the county can do much of anything, as someone pointed out. If the feds decide that they're coming in to look at a lot of things, they have a lot more leeway under the Patriot Act than they had previously.
Yeah.
But within the county, particularly with regard to law enforcement, and I know you had Larry and Dave on a few weeks ago.
Right. Dave D'Amico and Larry Trout.
Right. Our county prosecutor has made it clear through the various things that he has said and told his people.
Mm-hmm.
We are not in the business of snuffing out, or sniffing out, I should say, not snuffing out, sniffing out undocumented people in Monmouth County. Obviously, if they commit criminal activity, they're going to be held to the same standard as any citizen would be.
Mm-hmm.
But apart
mm-hmm.
from that, if they are a victim of crime, their status is not an issue, and their status in and of itself is not an issue. So I would say on that regard, but, you know, you and your fellow guests there made a very good point about establishing a level of trust with the audiences that we try to do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very fluid time.
Yeah.
You'd love to be able to say, we guarantee that no one here is going to be interested in, you know, turning on you.
Yeah.
And certainly no presenters are.
You know, it's a risk that these people take. I mean, these people are risk takers by very definition, aren't they? By coming.
Mm-hmm.
So why not take the extra risk? You've come this far. Mm-hmm. I mean,
I don't know of too many more supportive environments than Monmouth County, New Jersey, which has led to criticism on the people who don't necessarily think that these workshops, they think that they're incorrectly encouraging that we become a magnet for people who are elsewhere in the state and might come to Monmouth County. I don't think that's true. I think the magnet is economic opportunity. That's the magnet. Once they're here,
I'm glad you said that.
We're going to do our best to make certain that their rights are protected and that they know what their responsibilities as a community member are.
Okay. Well, I would be very interested in hearing how you make out.
Yeah.
Really, honestly, I would really like to know how many people fill out these W-7 forms and get documented in that respect. Would you come back to us and tell us how it worked out?
Well, if you're addressing me, we certainly will. We had good turnout in various of our workshops.
Mm-hmm.
We have both the law enforcement and the workers workshops, two different streams of them.
Mm-hmm.
We've had good turnout. We're expecting good turnout. We never know how many people follow through entirely. We show them what to do. But we never know how many people actually file the form.
So they don't hand the forms in at the end of the workshop?
They're not a governmental agency in the regard of collecting tax forms. They still have to go ahead and file
on their own.
But we can certainly get back to you and tell you what kind of turnout we've had and reception.
Yeah.
Of course, the proof of the pudding for us is in attendance at workshops, and we have another one coming up in Long Branch in November.
Well, what about the what would that be, the IRS then, right? They would have the W-7. Do you know if the stats show that there's been an increase in the number of filers?
I don't know that.
Overall?
I know that there are banks in other parts of the country, notably California, that are incorrectly using the I-10 number to allow people to open bank accounts.
Oh, really?
That's
they're not allowed to do that?
But, of course, opening bank accounts is a good thing because it gives you a secure place to put cash.
Exactly.
It is otherwise on the person or in the home.
Goes back to that abuse problem.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, this obviously is not going to be the end of this discussion. We'll have to get you in here, Linda, and maybe get some INS officials.
I would like to add one thing, if I could, Maureen, it's sort of a plug. We have actually two partners, the Human Relations Commission does, in doing these workshops.
Mm-hmm.
One is Sophonis Agency, which has been just first rate in helping us in so very many ways. They're a great agency.
Thank you.
And the other is the Department of Labor and Workforce Development and our colleague, Rida Afanador, who would have been with us tonight except she took a fall at work.
Oh, dear.
And so she's incapacitated tonight. But without these two women in particular and the agencies they represent, we probably wouldn't have...
Hispanic Affairs and Resource Center.
Right, and the Department of Labor, State of New Jersey.
Okay.
So that's a little plug.
Oh, right.
Thank you, Linda. We appreciate it. We love you, too.
Thank you for allowing us to come on.
Well, we're going to do it again.
Wonderful.
We're going to do it again. We'll have, I think it's Mike Zetsky. We're trying to remember the name of this local immigration attorney. He's just great. And it's,
it'd be great to have him on.
Corporal Ratsky.
Doesn't come to mind, does it?
No, I'm afraid I don't know, but I'd enjoy very much hearing
from you. Sorry about that, Mike. We'll make it up to you next week. Thank you, Linda, very much for listening tonight and to sending your people down here. It's very interesting.
Well, unfortunately, I can't send anybody anywhere, but they're
all right.
They're great women.
I hope to meet you, too.
Sure. Bye-bye.
Okay. Thanks very much, Linda. That was Linda DeCaro. And she used to be the chair of the Monmouth County Human Relations Commission.
She's now the vice chair.
And she's now the vice chair. So great. And I want to thank you very much and wish you luck. If you want to plug the date one more time of the workshop.
Sure. The next workshop is on October 9th at Jesus the Lord Roman Catholic Church at 123 Broad Street in Keyport. And our conference will start at 1 p.m. after the noon mass.
All right. Is there a phone number they can call if they forget that information?
You can feel free to call Hispanic Affairs and Resource Center. We're taking the calls for additional information at 732-774-3282.
3282. And may I recommend that perhaps you come on this station when they have the Latino hour on. What's the name of the show? What?
Lancherita.
Lancherita.
And when is that?
Friday night. I think it's on every day, actually. 28 hours a week, so they're on pretty much every day.
Okay,
and get the word out there because they have a huge Latino listenership. So I want to thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Maureen. It was great dealing with all of you.
Fatima and Yesenia Piker and Fatima Potente.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure and an honor.
Well, come back again.
We will. Thank you so much.
And we want to go back to Tom Boyd, and we'll talk a little bit about music. You brought your guitar.
Well, I did, but, you know, it's a technically difficult thing to do in the studio, so I guess I will do my live playing another time. I'll tell you a music story, though.
Oh,
it's an Asbury Park music story. It's my introduction to actually playing that Mr. Fix-It that you were so kind to feature.
We should explain how that came about, too. Bob Stevens, who used to be the sidekick on this show, was actually in Red Bank. I think he was at Jack's Music.
Mm-hmm.
And he saw the CD standing up there just like this, the Sail On CD. And he said, oh, what's this? And I think your sister happened to be standing
there. She was standing right there. Yeah.
At the moment. Yeah, this was meant to
be. True story.
This was
true
fate.
Story.
And Bob brought it back and said, we have a theme now for this show. So.
Well, I'll tell you the story quickly. I'll compress it. My music career, such as it is, began with Jax, because I knew Jack Anderson pretty well, and I helped them move that store from one side of the street to the other a long time ago. And instead of taking money, he gave me an old Stella guitar, and I took it home and began to play three chords. And some 45 years later, I'm still playing those same three chords, as it turns out, but I've added a few more. My Asbury Park music story is this. I went to Monmouth College, as I said, and there used to be a guy who sang at the Student Prince. There used to be a Student Prince in Asbury Park, and a guy by the name of Joe Finn sang there. Joe Finn was an Irish musician, and he had a couple of nights when he was off, so they called me and they said, you want to be the off-night entertainer? I said, oh boy. Showbiz, my career is made. In the Student Prince, back in the day, there was a pool table, and on top of the pool table, a piece of plywood. Hanging up over the piece of plywood was a light bulb on a string, dangling back and forth. That was my stage. And I would climb up on a chair up onto the plywood on top of the pool table in the Student Prince, and I got to sing to the backs of some guys' heads who were sitting at the bar over there somewhere. Thus was born my career in music.
Very and, humble beginning.
Yeah. Well, it's currently very humble, too, actually. But
well, that's where Bruce used to sing, right?
Well,
Bruce
later, because I'm older.
Prince.
I'm older. He was then Dr. Zoom and the Sonic Boom, and he came in after I played the Student Prince.
But you broke the ice for him.
Well, I probably did, and I didn't drive so many people away, because there were still a few customers when
there
he came.
There you go.
But the other music story is on the boardwalk. I went to the convention hall one night to see Joan Baez. And Joan Baez was touring, and she played her set, and it was very impressive. And this is back in the days of folk. And Joni reached behind her into the curtains, and she said, I want you to meet a friend. And it was Bob Dylan. She was dragging Dylan around with her at that time. And we didn't know what to make of him exactly. And, of course, a lot of folks are still in that place, not quite knowing what to make of him. But I owe a lot of my enthusiasm and my participation in the music business to Asbury Park. I have a web show now, and it's about music. And
is that address?
It's www.rockandroots, rockandroots.org. And if you click on there, you're going to hear a lot of good music that I pull together from all over the place. And I invite folks to do that.
Can we hear folk, my favorite?
Oh, yeah, all kinds. We got folk and jazz and swing and blues.
No, I was a folk, John.
A folkie.
My husband John and I are huge folk fans.
Yep, me too. And swing and country and soul and R&B and world and Latin and all kinds of music.
World?
Oh, yeah.
What's world?
World music?
International?
Oh, dear. It's music from all over the place, from Cap Verde, from all kinds of musicians who don't get on American radio because we don't make room for them, but I do.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to go on rockandroots.org and listen to
check
that.
Check it out.
Check out
it
world. Out. Get hip. Get with it.
Anyway, thanks and props to Asbury Park for giving me that launch long time ago.
Well, I have to tell my Bob Dylan story because I want to throw it out there in case there's somebody out there who can tell me whether it was Bob Dylan or not. when I was in private school at the Sherwood School in Glen Ridge, there was a fellow who came in. He was about 17. I was probably about 12, which would have been about right. And bye-bye, gals. Thanks very much. And he was only there for maybe 3 months, maybe not even that long. And his name was Bob Zimmerman, of course. And he had a guitar, and he looked an awful lot like Bob Dylan did in those days. The same hair, the black hair, and the skinny guy, high cheekbones, and was kind of a moody guy and just didn't say much, just liked to play his guitar. He had an aunt who was raising him. And he was from the Midwest, and he was just out east just long enough to do something. I don't know whether it was to try and get him into a school or what it was. But in the private school, there were a lot of people, you know, coming through to, you know, cram for some kind of test or whatever, and then you didn't see them again. But I remember that he gave me his cream-filled Hostess cupcake.
I am speechless.
Wow.
You knew Bob Dylan. It must have been Bob Dylan. You know, he has his autobiography out now. We've got to rush to the store and find out.
I saw the autobiography there. I was down at Borders, and I looked in the directory. You know, Frank and I were there. He goes, check the directory. You know, I'm looking through the directory. I said, there's nothing here. It's at Sherwood School, though. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I mean, is it an autobiography or another biography?
It's called Chronicles, something like that.
His story, he tells it. Yeah. Finally, he started to open up and talk a lot about and write a lot about his life. He also has a reputation for spinning yarns and telling lies, making up stories and then laughing when you buy them.
What do you mean also? What do you mean by that? No, tomboy. You know, we forgot to say hi to Mom and Kathy.
Mom and Kath, my heroes.
Hey.
Glad that they got to be a part of this sale on Mr. Fix-It exercise, too. It was wonderful.
Yeah, and of course, it was very popular. We went through a lot of these. We raised a lot of money for the Booker Cancer Center in Red Bank and the Riverview Medical Center. And we got lots of letters about the money, thanking us for the money that all these guests, God bless them, forked out their $10 for the CD, and we happen to have a few. If you know anybody who's feeling nostalgic,
we occasionally had harass somebody. I remember harassing somebody on the elevator once on the elevator.
It's just being proactive.
It's a more better outcome from my music than I ever could have expected. And I thank you a lot for that.
Oh, you're very welcome. I'll accept that for the guests who bought it. But if you would like a copy, send us an email at asburyradio.com. I mean, asburyradio@aol.com. And would you like them to send you an email directly to you?
Sure. It's Tom at rockandroots.org.
All right. And so if you would like to buy a CD, you can write either one of us. How's that? And make it simple. $10 is cheap. And we want to thank the hardware store, 428 Main Street, Asbury Park, for bringing the show to the air tonight. 988-3339. They're fast, friendly, and helpful at the hardware store. And we want to thank Dr. Gina Buono, the Health and Back Chiropractic Wellness Center, 710 Cookman Avenue, 604-4852, for the relief of your life with Dr. Buono. And the firm of Bow and Vernicola LLC in Red Bank, Paul Vernicola, will tell you what you need to know about eminent domain. Call Paul at 345-0600. Paul actually represents both sides, and we know that, but that's where you get to know both sides of the story. 345-0600. And we want to wish Bill Giordano and the rest of them out there in Long Branch a lot of luck. And we're going to have them on their own hour on WYGG and 88.1 FM. And I will be hosting that show, so keep a lookout on the internet for that. We're going to do that. Next week, I think, is already our assembly debate.
Yeah.
So tune in for that. Tom Boyd, thank you so much. Thanks.
It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, everyone, for making this show possible tonight. And don't forget to speak up, because it's America. Yeah.